You're listening to Latin Waves with your hosts, Sylvia and Stuart Richardson. Latin Waves is more than just hot rhythms. This is a show about community, about creating a culture that is inclusive and based on fairness. Because everyone deserves dignity, respect, and has something to contribute. A new world is possible, and it all starts with us.
So yes, Venezuela is not alone. Venezuela has great friends and international friends who are helping them overcome this barrier of sanctions. And again, my great sorrow and shame is that a liberal government, a son of Pierre Trudeau, who was such a friend of Latin America, under Justin Trudeau, has taken part in this adventure and this looting, in this terrible campaign of the United States under Trump.
That's the voice of Venezuelan sociologist Maria Pais Victor. On this week's show, we speak to Maria about the ongoing brutal sanctions and attempted coup against Venezuela and Canada's shameful role in this adventure.
You are listening to Latin Waves. I'm your host, Sylvia Richardson. I'm joined by Dr. Maria Pais Victor. She's a sociologist. We're very privileged to have you, Maria. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you very much.
Now, we are talking about this long executed coup against Venezuela. And I think more importantly, we're talking about the victory of the Venezuelan people to ward off the violence and horrific attempts by the United States to crush their democratically elected government. Can we talk a little bit about the recent attacks against the Geneva Conventions and how this has not only put a black mark on the United States' ability to uphold the rule of law, but also put in question, you know, the story of democratic rule on the part of the United States?
The USA has violated the Vienna Convention by invading the Venezuelan embassy in Washington, D.C., a dangerous president. And Venezuela has had a moral victory because what it did was, instead of reciprocating and invading the American embassy in Caracas, it sent the special police there to protect it. And the President Maduro said, the United States doesn't follow international law, but we do. And we will protect the U.S. embassy in Caracas. We will not reciprocate. This was a moral victory, which, you know, you won't read in the Globe and Mail. But believe me, all around the world, diplomats took great interest in this because this was a great moral victory of Venezuela. That Venezuela has been saying all along through its ambassador in the UN that, listen, it isn't just Venezuela, it's the international law. Everything that they're doing here threatens every other country. Alfred Desaia, who is the UN rapporteur on human rights, has said the aggression of the United States against Venezuela is a looting campaign. It's a savage war, economic war against Venezuela. And the sad thing is, it's more than sad. To me, it is absolutely appalling, is that Canada is on side with this looting, with this savageness, with this destruction of international law. We have Freeland, who, in order to get all her commercial tidbits from the United States, is prepared to throw Canadian values into the gutter, which is what she has done. And so Canada, I'm not saying that Canada hasn't had its hands in murky things, and it has been backing the opposition through all these 20 years, but now it is absolutely the vanguard of the attack on Venezuela through the Lima group, and is going around trying to get other countries to go against Venezuela, which they have failed. The Lima group is now, quite a failure. But what is behind this? The Canadian oil companies, and especially the Canadian gold companies, Barrick Gold and all of those, what do they want? This is all about the resources of Venezuela. Venezuela has the largest oil reserves in the world, certified by third parties. and it has the fourth largest gold deposit in the world. So this is what they want, and they have offered these Lima Group countries, each of them a part of Venezuela. This is not a war against the regime of President Maduro. This is a war against the state of Venezuela, which they want to divide just like they did Yugoslavia. Okay, they want to give a piece of Venezuela to Colombia, a piece of Venezuela to Guyana, a large piece of Venezuela to Bolivia, and the rest they want to give in a golden tray to this corrupt elite, this opposition that we're the ones who governed Venezuela for 40 years and ran it into the ground. One thing that's very curious to me is that they have wanted to say, look at how terrible Venezuela is. Look, this is a horrible place. Look, this is the failure of socialist policies. Well, that's not true. This is the triumph of these sanctions. But also, they want to make invisible all the achievements of the Bolivarian Revolution. The first thing I want to say about the Bolivarian Revolution is that its backbone are the grassroots movements, are the Consejo Comunales and the communes, the communes and the councils, and all sorts of grassroots movements that they have. These are the ones that are feeding the country right now. These are the ones who are backing the government, who are helping in every way to create food, to make products, to even help with the security. It isn't just a government and a bureaucracy out there. This is the union of a revolution that has said from the start, we have got to change the bourgeois state. And the only way to change this bourgeois state, which was created by the bourgeoisie, of course, is to let enter the grassroots movements. That's why it isn't just a party. It isn't the PSUV that rules. The PSUV does rule. It is the ruling party. But it doesn't rule alone. It rules with the Polo Patriotico. The Polo Patriotico is the union of all of these grassroots companies. The women, the students, the campesinos, the people of different genders, all of these different groups are in the Polo Patriotico, and they have a say in what goes on. So this is what's different about Venezuela. This is what's different. And they want to cut down all that this revolution in 20 years has done. It's cut poverty by a third. It's cut extreme poverty by 57%. The UN's FAO says that Venezuela cut hunger by 0.5%, and malnutrition was down by 5%. Now, I can't tell you that this is it right now because of what is happening, but one thing that is still there is that it reduced illiteracy to nil. The important thing is that this is a population that is not only just literate, but one of the major readers in the world. They actually read and they go on to study, and because education is free up to the university. It's a country that even in these hard times, in the last 7 years, has built 2.5 million public housing units. And why aren't people dying on the streets of hunger with all of this? Because of the bags of food that the government buys food. This is a big thing. These boats are coming in loaded with food. The government puts them in bags and sells them at absolute low price to people, so they can have two bags of all the foodstuff they need twice a month, and it feeds about 7 million people. Here's one fact: 800 articles in the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal, only three mention the social programs, and they mention them dismissively. They don't want to see what is there in Venezuela. They don't want to see this is not a country in chaos. that this is a country that under terrible circumstances is really bucking up and fighting it, just like Cuba, because we have the example of Cuba that for 50 years, Cuba has had sanctions like these. Again, sanctions that are illegal, that are immoral, that are against international law.
Now, I want to say that this is not the U.S. first time at the rodeo. They have had many invasions in Latin America over the last century, over 100 invasions. And, you know, someone like me who grew up under the, you know, the sound of war and bombs dropping, I can tell you that most of us in Latin America are familiar with the tactics of the U.S., but there's a uniqueness about Venezuela. And I want to talk about this because the policies that the government of Hugo Chavez managed to put in place has created a momentum, you know, of eradicating poverty, but also of making their population literate, of making a population engage and co-creating their own policies. American economists Robin Hanel and Michael Albert have written about this, an economic process of the people, by the people, for the people. And so I want to talk a little bit about this day that I think will live in the minds of Latin Americans for many decades to come. And that is February 20th, 2019. Can we talk about what happened on that day when the U.S. tried to exert the last nail on the coffin, as they sighed, and what happened?
This was a montage. This was done as a theater. They even had a supposed musical event they were having there. They brought, can you imagine, the Vice President of the United States was there. And they staged all of this on a bridge that was not a bridge. It was a bridge that had been built, but the Colombians didn't want to finish it. You could not cross this bridge from one side to the other because it was not a bridge that was actually working. There were no customs on either side. But that's what they chose to do. And they brought Guaido there. And Guaido, as you know, is a member of the defunct Congress. Because it's defunct because it rebelled against the power, the executive power, and it rebelled against the legislative power. It would not accept the Supreme Court. It would not accept Maduro. And when they were elected, they said that what they were going to do is just overthrow the government. So the court said, you can't. Nothing that you do is going to be accepted because you've got three members there that were elected through force, through corruption. So he is a part of that. He went there. He promised Pence that he had a great following, and that these he had following in the army, and that these people were going to cross the bridge in the thousands. And they were going to be able to bring this humanitarian aid into Venezuela. They had these trucks. And you know what happened? Nothing happened. There were a few men who jumped and went over to the other side, a handful of them. But in fact, the army was like a wall there. And they were immovable. And behind them were the people backing their soldiers. This was very, very impressive. And it freaked the leaders of the army of Colombia and the army of Brazil who were there watching. So when they saw that this wasn't working, from the Colombian side, they set fire to the three vans that were supposedly carrying humanitarian aid. Fortunately, we now have, you know, cameras everywhere. And when the fire stopped, they realized there was no humanitarian aid in there. It was full of instruments for war. It was full of all kinds of things to use for blocking roads and making weapons and all of that. So there was no humanitarian way. This was all a montage, and it failed. And it showed the world the strength of the Venezuelan Bolivarian Revolution.
I wonder if you could talk a little bit about the civic military union that was forged on that day, because I don't think we know enough about this throughout Latin America. Most people in Latin America are often suspicious of their military. Most people are often you know, reluctant to even be in contact with any kind of official, whether at the federal or local level, simply because, you know, the military has often been run by elites and operated in on behalf of the elites. It has never been about protecting or upholding the rights of the people.
Well, it's a bit like the Cuban military, which is beloved by its people because it was the Cuban military that saved them, first of all, from Fulgencio Batista, and then afterwards from Playa Girón, at the Bay of Pigs. And so they love their army. Well, the same thing in Venezuela. First of all, it is not an army because early on in the 70s, they changed the way soldiers and officers are educated. They don't have a separate one for the upper class, the ones who are going to be, the officers, and another one for the soldiers. Anyone who can pass the exams can become even a general or an admiral or whatever. And furthermore, one of the most important things in the education of Venezuelan army is that they go to the university. So at that time, at the time of Chavez, he passed his exams. It was great, and he went to university. So you had university educated soldiers, not just educated in their arms, you know, and in their military sort of knowledge, but they would take psychology, they take communication, they would take history in a university, which of course gives them a huge difference of outlook and knowledge, not just I'm just a military guy, I also know about these other important, you know, liberal arts. So the army of Venezuela looks like its people, and they are its people. And one of the things that Chavez's movement did at the very, very beginning, 1986, after the horrible Caracaso, when rookie soldiers were brought in from the interior so that they could massacre the people of Caracas, Chavez brought forward his group and he said, we must make an oath that if we use our arms against our people, we will be damned. We will be cursed. And this is a very important part of the ideology of Venezuelan military. If you read any book on military matters, any book at all, they will tell you the fundamental ingredient to the success of any army is its ideology, its morale, its unity with itself and what they're doing. So there's a big difference between an army that's going out to, massacre some people that they've never even heard of, like the Americans went off to Vietnam to kill Vietnamese whom they didn't even know who Vietnamese were or why they were doing there, and an army that is fighting for its own people. Just think of the army of England and the RAF, how they fought to the death. It didn't matter how many of them died, but they were not going to allow the invasion of Nazi Germany into England. And that morality was, of course, what was the backbone of the British triumph in the Battle of Britain. Well, the same thing in Venezuela. Right now, the army of Venezuela is so united with its people. The people are so grateful to its army that they have this what's called military civic union. So this is one of the things that they don't reckon. If the United States should invade Venezuela, and I don't think they will, but if they should, you would have a regional war that would make the Vietnam War look like child's play, because it would ignite violence along the region, and it would be a terrible thing. The saner minds in the Pentagon are the ones advising Trump not to listen to these warmongers, Bolton, Abrahams, Pompeo, and Pence. It's kind of funny, but it's the military people in the United States who realize, no, Venezuela will not be a pushover. This is not an easy victory because this is what Trump wants. Trump wants a victory before the election so that he can be, narcissistic fellow that he is. He wants some sort of international kind of achievement, which he hasn't been able to get. So I come back to my point. My point is that the United States is sinking its reputation, that it is trashing international law, that violation of the UN Charter, of the Geneva Convention, of the Vienna Convention, of numerous commercial agreements is going to fall back on badly on them. Because what are people saying? What will sane minds are there saying? We cannot trust the United States because they don't even keep the normal rules of capitalism. They are looting. They are stealing. This is a terrible precedent that can happen to any country. That is why they go on, and Canada goes on saying that 50 countries back Guaido. Well, what they don't tell you is that 150 countries back Maduro, because all the countries, the non-aligned countries of the United Nations, who are the majority, are steadfastly on the side of President Maduro, because they realize Maduro was elected. He was elected by more than 6.5 million votes in a clear election on the 20th of May of last year, an election that had 2,000 international observers, with a system that Jimmy Carter says is the best in the world. And yet the United States go on saying about, Guaido, that Guaido was elected. He wasn't elected president. He stood on a street and lifted his hand and said, I am the new president of Venezuela. This is ridiculous. There's no law. There's no nothing. He is a president of nothing. Guaido does not even command one policeman. He doesn't have one bureaucratic office under him. He is a nothing. He is a complete puppet of the United States, a man who was trained specifically for this under the CIA. So what I predict that Venezuela's moral victory is going to give great benefit. I predict that the United States realizes it cannot invade Venezuela, not with great cost to itself. I predicted the sanctions against Venezuela are going to go right against the United States, basically because of the oil. And the fracking companies in the United States are falling like dominoes in bankruptcy because the cost of fracking has just shot up. And because of the United States warmongering with Iran and China and Russia. I don't know who else, Trump is going to, create trouble with. And all of these is going to make the Venezuelan oil even more important. And there will be more countries that will want to buy Venezuelan oil. And the United States is going to be left quite isolated internationally. I fear that all of this is going to affect Canada. Minister Freeland just don't realize what a mess they have got themselves into. Freeland has just recently gone to Cuba. Imagine, she's gone to Cuba, supposedly, to get Cuba to stop backing Venezuela. Do you think Cuba, who has been under the same sanctions as Venezuela for 50 years, is going to back the sanctions of the United States against Venezuela? Well, you know, hell will freeze over when this happens. She's gone there, of course, to try to protect Canadian banks that have business down there. But her role is pitiful, that she should even think that she could go to Cuba and ask Cuba to betray Venezuela when they are in the same boat as Venezuela. And Venezuela has no greater friend than Cuba. Except, I must say, that one of the reasons why the United States will not invade Venezuela is because Venezuela has two great friends. One is Russia and one is China. And the presence of both Chinese and Russian troops in Venezuelan soil, who are there under international treaty, quite above board. You know, this is quite legal, these treaties that Venezuela has had with China and Russia for a number of years, and they are there to give all kinds of help with military, the use of the military equipment that they have bought from them. Well, the fact that they are there was a message that the Russian and the Chinese have given to Trump, saying, you don't mess with Venezuela because we have a great deal of investment in Venezuela, and we won't stand by and watch you invade Venezuela. And may I say one thing about the investments of Russia and China? And I have seen them, because I've been in Venezuela, I've seen the things that they have invested in. One of the great things that these two countries have done is what's called technology transfer. So whatever they are doing there, they are also training Venezuelans to do. I'll give you an example. The Chinese have put up 3 satellites for Venezuela. Venezuela before had no satellites. The satellites have been really important for communication within the country, especially communication with medicine and all of this kind of stuff. Anyway, now they launched these satellites, but all of them are now controlled and operated by Venezuelans who have been trained in China to know how to work these satellites. This is amazing. NASA never once in all the years ever once asked or proposed to Venezuela that they would train Venezuelans for anything. There was no Venezuelan anywhere near NASA because they wouldn't help with the transfer of technology. Chinese are really helping with the agriculture because Venezuela's agriculture was terrible. So people are very happy with the investments of Russia and China. And Venezuela is paying them. It isn't just they have given us humanitarian aid that has been asked and received properly. So we have had many planes arriving from Russia and China with food and especially with medicine for Venezuela. If it wasn't for that, I don't know what would have happened. And this is genuine bona fide humanitarian aid. We've received humanitarian aid from the United Nations, from the International Red Cross, and from other sources, and they have been properly received and properly asked for, and they were not, you know, this show and this deceitful thing that the United States tried to do in Cucuta on the 20th of February. So yes, Venezuela is not alone. Venezuela has great friends and international friends who are helping them overcome this barrier of sanctions. And again, my great sorrow and shame is that a liberal government, a son of Pierre Trudeau, who was such a friend of Latin America, under Justin Trudeau, has taken part in this adventure, in this looting, in this terrible campaign of the United States under Trump, as Alfred Zaya has said, a looting campaign of Venezuela, a savage economic war, and that we Canadians cannot forget that 40,000 Venezuelans are dead because of those sanctions. And we must not forget that because our government has been a partner to all of this.
We have to leave it there. Thank you so much for being with us today. Thank you so much for all your work.
My thanks are for you. And believe me, from all my heart, I thank you for your solidarity. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
We've come to the end of our show, Latin Waves. Latin Waves is an internationally syndicated weekly program made available through campus and community stations and available out to the world at www.latinwavesmedia.com. Visit Latin Waves Media to hear previous shows, to access resources, or support our efforts towards social change via community project engagement. Thank you, and bye for now.